Okay, on the basis that they don't matter, let's start. It's great to be here again. Well, here again in Berlin, here again in front of Package SourceCon. You'll have noticed that I only turn up in the years when there's an Olympics on, or when Scotland don't qualify for the European Championship, and Germany get knocked out early. Shouldn't have mentioned that. Right, 10 years of Package Source. Thought we'd have a look at that. Package Source is an interesting beast, like many other 10-year-olds. 10-year-olds are, around about this time, they're making friends. They get a bit conscious of their appearance. They're now capable of abstract thought, whereas before they weren't. All right. 10-year-olds start to get bored easily. Lots of 10-year-olds here. And if you do get bored, by the way, I've got some book covers that are totally inappropriate for children, so just put your hand up and ask for them, right? So if I see you waving, I'll know what you want. All right, 10-year-olds, the body is about to change. They're about to go through puberty, and they're about to gain spots and bumps in all funny areas, right? So that's what 10-year-olds are doing. They're not yet into the mood swings, so still talking about package source here. And 10-year-olds are still able to form conversations. They're not into the Morse code form of grunts yet. So, are you getting up? Right, so package source is still all right for that. And this is a quote that's on the back of somebody's T-shirt. Right, I don't usually go around copying T-shirts, but he was sat in front of me for a minute or so, so I copied it down. And one of the themes of this talk that I wanted to make was getting to know yourself. We're 10 years old now, we're capable of abstract thought. We should be getting to know ourselves. Right? Knowing your enemy and knowing yourself, that's my son's movement. Right, and another interesting quote from history. Sometimes we learn by repetition, and by 10 we may be looking at better ways of learning things rather than just repetition. Right, so I said 10 years old. It's actually about 10 and a half now, coming up for 11. It's probably about 11 years since we got package installed into Source. Almost 11 years since we put bsd.ports.me into user share. And we actually count Package Source's birthday by the time we put the first main file into Package Source. So that's October, beginning of October. In 2002, I did a talk at EuroBSDCon about package source, and it grew out of previous ports. And these are some changes we made. I'm going to outline the changes here. It's quite interesting, actually, just to see what we did gain in the early days. Fairly early on, we moved the ports that we made from source to package source. Made it a bit easier to have individual package source trees all around. And the last time I looked, FreeBSD still had problems in this area and used various definitions to get the same kind of idea. It means that you can have one stable package source tree, one development one, and they don't matter at all, even if you're mucking about with the infrastructure. I did a similar talk in Karlsruhe in 2004. And it was interesting because the FreeBSD people convened a BOF just after that to see what they could do to gain some of the changes that we had. I'm not going to go through them all, you can all see them up there. Some of them are quite useful, some of them are very useful as well. Tobias talked about portability earlier on, and that was what made Package Source what it is. I completely agree. It was first ported to SARS in 1999, and then onto Linux, and then we gained the generic POSIX bootstrap in 2001 when it was ported to macOS 10. Rather pressing. And there we go. So, the top one there, build link, is also one of the things that makes package source unique. Johnny Lang's way of isolating the packages that are installed and of getting the individual effects of those packages, superb. Nothing else exists like it out there. And we should all remember that completely. Silly one, next, the man equals taken from the package source make files. The package source make files used to hold the documentation in there in the form of man equals. We took that out, so absolutely no reason to be there. Digital signatures, I've got down the bottom. PGP and GPG, that was added in September 2001. For some reason there was not much take up of it, probably due to the events of that month as well. As to the actual form of digital signatures we have, whether it's GPG, whether it's NIC-51M based thing, don't really give a toss. As long as we have the functionality in there, and there's no loss of functionality going between old and new, and everybody can do what they want, when they want, with digital signatures, to know where a package has come from, who signed it, whether it's useful to be installed, whether it's been interfered with in any way, that's the kind of thing we're looking for from digital signatures. Okay, we introduced patch file digests mainly as a result of looking at PRs that people had raised with us. And we're getting lots of times when people were taking old packet source trees and untarring a new version on top of it. New version didn't have patches, the old one did, but the patches were still in the tree. And we're getting a number of errors when that happened. And believe me, it was not obvious what was happening when they did this. So we added the digest to the patch files and made up the disinfo file as well. And that stopped the errors straight away. Okay, a nice instance there of looking at some of the things that we're having troubles with, analysing what it is, and then getting a decent solution out of it. I hate using the word solution, but I just did, sorry. Right, other digest algorithms. ME5 was considered to be weak in around about 2001, and so we moved over to SHA1 in that time. And we added RMD160 in 2005 or so, when SHA1 was thought to be weak as well. Unfortunately, they're both of the same family, but at the moment, I don't know of anything that will hash to two separate digest values using two different algorithms, even when it's been interfered with. So hopefully we're all right for a while on that one. More changes. X package wedge. Todd Feeling put this in, and this was great. This was at the time of brewing, because previously we used to pull it at the X11 tree. We used to install packages into X11. That was great until the new version of X11 came along. We installed a new version of X11 and all our packages had gone. Yet the meta info was still there. So, using X package wedge means that we install all packages into the prefix. This was great. Really was good. If you don't know how good it was, please come and ask me afterwards and I'll go on and on about it for ages. Previously,
Paul's finally fixed this issue last year, I think.
Did it? Well, right, and that's because they moved to XR, was it? Right, we checked the object format of package install time. That was quite useful when all the NetBSD or i386 and AMD64 moved over onto ELF from ADA out. And that meant that we might have had problems if we tried to link an old package, which was compiled ADA out, and a new one that was compiled with ELF. So we added that at package install time. Audit packages was done in 2000, I believe, during a freeze for one of our package source releases, but the benefits were deemed to outweigh the disadvantages for that, and so we added audit packages. And hopefully everybody here uses it. If you don't, then you should do. It's a great tool. And we'll help tell you what's out of date, what needs changing, and everything like that. So, system packages. one of the things we've got to keep doing to get to know ourselves is we've got to keep looking at things, finding out what has worked, what hasn't worked, and fix the stuff that hasn't worked. A good example of this is system packages, which was added in 1998 and is still about to come to the trade. What we need to do is have a look at it, see what needs to be done, and go out and do it. Unfortunately, it's a large job, and nobody's had the chance, the time, or the energy to work with this. If anybody feels like stepping up to it, please do. But one of the things we've got to do in package stores is bear in mind that system packages may use the packaging tools. And so that anything that we do in package stores may affect NetBSD when it comes to install itself. That's especially true of the infrastructure, of binary packages, of signed packages, everything like that. So what? This is where we were in 2002. What have we changed since then? We're on to the third iteration of building, and it's got better and better all the time. BuildLink is like opposing thumbs for package sources. It's what gets us out of the trees. And it really gives us a huge advantage over any other system that's out there. We've introduced quarterly releases. This may be a good thing, maybe a bad thing, depending on your viewpoint. For me, it's great, because we have a development tree to work on, and we also have a stable release. It does put extra pressure on package source relevance. So, anybody wants to volunteer for any of the work that they're doing, please feel free. Style is down here. All right. Package source is now in 14 platforms, and they work to a greater or lesser degree. It's up to us to make them work to a better degree. That's not always easy. There are various changes things like that we would need to do to some of the bulk build stuff, maybe. Some of the infrastructure as well. The 14 platforms doesn't include the HERD or AUX. AUX seems to be a new addition on one of the mailing lists. Although we did gain QNX just last year. The alternative framework has come along. Pretty neat, actually. And I think the idea of this came from Debian. So we can certainly learn from other packaging systems that are out there. Alternative framework, if you don't know it, you want an editor, you want a VI editor, so it'll go out and it'll tell you the ones that you can have. Won't try and install one if you already have one installed. So, newer changes. We've got a balkanized bsd.package.make. It's our main make file for BSD. Packages infrastructure. A few years ago, it was balkanized. In other words, it used to be read about six times in every invocation that we make. We cut it up into smaller makefile fragments, so it's quicker, more easier to use, that kind of thing. There's been a few troubles with that, though, in that now if you want to find something in there, regret is your only friend. None of the C-scope or any GID indexing tools that we have will do any indexing of makefile fragments. It just doesn't understand the syntax. We could tell it to us, though, yes. We need some better documentation under for our infrastructure. Completely better. At the moment, we don't have much, and we do need more. Sorry? It has got better, we've got more of it. I'm not sure it's got better to a certain degree, right? There's some of the information out there, the how-tos aren't really how-tos, it was how I did. And it doesn't give a reason behind why they were doing things. It depends which one I'm talking about. Sorry? That's right, and we've also grown some help within package lint. I've found that help is good, it's great, but sometimes it doesn't really tell me what I want to do. I had one time an unusual zip archive which I wanted to extract using the normal infrastructure. And one of the problems that we had was that the makefiles within the zip package thought they were case insensitive. Our natural default is to unzip stuff case sensitive. You then have to look up how to do this. Now, using zip, that's fine, you can tell it an argument, but if you have to tell the package source makefile how to do that unzipping, it's difficult. It's very, very difficult. The package wouldn't want to tell you. Right, you have to dig deep into the stuff. Now, this is for me, for somebody who's been using package source fairly early on. What would it be like for somebody who just wants to make this a package? He's a first-time package source developer, in other words. He's come to package source because he heard it's portable or it's easy to use or something else. If they have to grep through all these makefiles, that's really not the best way of doing things. Amitai is going to be talking to you tomorrow about his Summer of Code project. And hopefully one of the better things that we'll get out of this, I don't know, he can speak for himself on it, but I'm certainly looking for some good documentation on that. Not someone to prejudge anything about that.
Sure.
Anything, Amitai? Okay. We've had a couple of package install rewrites. Jörg has just talked about the rewritten bulk build. The package install rewrites, I did one of them in 2004, but the licensing on it wasn't clear at the time. And it still resides in my home directory on Babylon 5. Please feel free to have a look at it if you want. The bulk build's been rewritten, but we've still got the old one as well. We need to decide which one we're going to use and move over to it, or stay with the old one, or whatever. Right? We need one that's maintained, one that's documented, and one that works. For all platforms, not just Dragonfly and NetBSD. Not asking too much, is it? Package install renovation. Again, we need to decide what we're doing with that, but I'm getting ahead of myself here. Package install renovation is one of the new changes we've done. Destr as well. The ability to install a package into a staging directory, make a binary package out of that, and then install it at a later date. Great. It really is good. Useful functionality. We should have done ages ago, and I apologize for not doing it myself. Again, audit packages, such a useful thing, but it was as slow as anything. Rewriting in C has been great. We've got a few rough edges around there as well, but having it now in C and in the standard standard install is brilliant. Right, so implications of this. Bootstrapping is now difficult. And I speak as somebody with a MacBook Pro here who bootstrapped package source under 10.4, then, idiot that he is, decided to install macOS 10.5, Leper as it's known in the community. Trying to bootstrap it on top of that, not a chance. The various things that they've done in 10.5 developers appear like using POSIX threads and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of POSIX switches to the compiler. In addition, bootstrapping over its previously bootstrapped systems is difficult to do. So all in all, we need to get our bootstrapping brains in gear. How to do this well on different platforms, and this isn't an easy job. I'm not deriding the people who've done this. Bootstrapping is difficult, we all know that, but it's a very necessary thing because we live or die by it. If you don't have decent bootstrap kits, and that includes binary kits as well, we're not going to get users on some of the more unusual or esoteric platforms. We're in danger of turning into a packaging elite. That's great to see everybody in package source done. Having said that, what I would be very wary of is any times that there are developer-only documentation or help channels. I don't think this has happened. I think we're in danger of turning into a packaging elite, where we know how to do something and the others don't. And they need to talk to us on IRC or something like that to know how to do things. The cure for this, documentation, be great. We have some, but we can improve it. Petra.
What problems is if you are packet source and want to just make this one package, there's lots of documentation and you look at that huge bulk and say, oh God, I'll have some time for that next year. So what we need is not more documentation, but start out here guide.
You're now talking to somebody who who's new to packages, who only wants to build a few packages, right?
Yes.
But I think there's also another target audience which we should think about, and this is people who add projects or who add packages to packages.
That was what I was talking about. I have at present exactly one package I maintain of four.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically cobbled it together by looking at another simple package,
right,
because it wasn't very complicated to bring up, and the sheer amount of documentation sort of made me go away and say it's probably easier to figure it out by looking at another simple package than going for the documentation.
I think that's spot on, I really do.
One
of the ideas I had some time ago was to point out to people like that canonical examples of good packages that we've done the package source make file for and the plist, and in order for them to be able to say, oh yes, this is how you do that, or this is how you do that. The developer's guide goes into that in some ways, but it's probably a bit out of date now. I don't know whether it's been updated just recently. Our move to XML didn't exactly help that. Whatever your views on XML, believe me. But yes, I do take your point there. You had another one, Gary?
No, I just wanted to point out there are different audiences now. The
yeah.
User audience, which you have been talking about, but we should not forget about the, well, not package source hacker, but package source contributor, who don't want to go into the details of how the makefile works and so on and so forth, but they just want to have a simple structure. They want to know which mechanisms are available to accomplish certain issues. They want to know what's best practice to do something, because you can always find a hack to do something, but it's really not the point.
Yeah.
If there's some mechanisms available in package source, and there are a lot, and then it's something that makes package source attractive to people to add packages.
I don't get that one, because this is one of the main points of the package source documentation is right now, which
right.
is the problem, but I don't understand where it is.
No, I'm just saying, when we talk about documentation, we should not forget about this particular audience. Yeah, it's okay, but it needs to be maintained, and if new features get included, I just want to point out that we should not forget about these people and keep it up. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. One of the things that I would like to see, if you type a question into one of the search engines, is that it takes you straight to the developer's guide or something like that. Some equivalent documentation. So we're relatively close to the top of the tree as far as indexing and things like that goes for most of the search engines. But our documentation isn't there if you go and search for it. So that must be something in our part that's the problem, whether it's XML, whether it's in PDFs or something like that. I don't think that's the case, because usually the spiders can get those. We need to think of different ways of doing this. At the risk of going boring you on again, I'll return to this. Yeah. I believe that more attention to detail is needed here. We've spoken briefly about some of the documentation that we have and some of that. Some of the errors that we make occasionally in package source, yeah, we could do better. And I'm holding my hand up just as much as anybody here, because we're all rushed, we're all busy, things like that. We can all do better. And I'm not trying to put a downer in anything or anything, but please think before you commit, do a diff, and just see what it does. More discussion of changes are needed prior to the changes happening. There's a number of occasions when we've seen things hit the tree when we didn't know they were coming. And that's just not really showing respect to the other users of package source. The bulk build people and things like that, they need information in advance at the start of the bulk build, just to test the changes that have gone in. I think it's got a bit better just recently, so I think that's great. I'm not going to labour the point any more than we have. In general, I think we need to make package source a better place to be. I think we have done I think we need to go even a bit further from that. So getting to know ourselves again, the quote from earlier from Sun Tzu, analysing what we do and making Pakisource a better place to be. So, what can we do? I already mentioned the Amitai's project here, which I'm rapidly trying to hijack. Not just placeholder documents, we need things telling us what it is, what it does, why it does this. Right? We can probably guess ourselves what it's doing, just by looking at the source code. But we need to know why it's doing that. Why do I need to set up a user for this? Why do I need this shell? Why do I need some weird argument to unzip to give me case-sensitive files and anything? We need to discuss changes on the mailing list a lot. We need to reaffirm package source as the generic packaging system. I don't think there is another thing out there at all. Fink might like to think it is, maybe binary-wise. But there's nothing else out there that can let you build from source exactly what to do. So you're sure what you build, you're sure there's no weird stuff in there completely. Documentation, we could start doing blogs. Anybody do a blog here? Sorry, I didn't mean to out you. There are actually marvellous ways of getting information out there. Mainly because some search engines do index all of them as well. And secondly, it just makes a nice different subject really from what I had for my dinner yesterday or something like that. Please, I do encourage you all and me to go out there and blog about this kind of thing. One of the things we did at TNF is we got Sun to license Java to our stuff to give us Java code free of charge. This is about 2 years ago or so. And one of the emails we got back from them was that someone wanted to get some of their high-level execs to start blogging about NetBSD in the next few weeks. I think I must have forgotten about it, never mind. But it's interesting to note that Sun, as a company like that, use blogs. It's one of the main ways of getting information out onto the web. Right. Remember our strengths. It really is the only cross-platform packaging system. Johnny Lamb's flavors provide the flexibility. And a number of times I've been to EuroBSDCon and they've said, oh well, it's not package source, it's not as big as FreeBSD ports, it's not as big as Debian. Size isn't everything. And then some of the young ladies in the audience shouted at me, yes it is, yes it is. We're wider then. We're not bigger, we're wider. 14 times as big, not quite 14 times, because obviously QNX can't build any X stuff at the moment. Right. Probably about seven times all in all. But it is encouraging to see QNX, to see AUX support coming in from that. And that's one of the ways that we'll gain strength and portability going to other operating systems. So let's sum up package source. It's where innovation happens. I don't know of any other packaging system that I've seen, certainly not in the BSD world, that does innovation quite like we do. And I'm not just trying to impress you here or say thank you very much. I am doing that, but where else have you seen all the changes that we've had coming through? Others are following this, and I don't consider rewriting packaging tools in Perl as a viable option for a lot of things. I don't see that to be innovation, I see that as a step backward. Mainly because you go to bootstrap Perl and not get package installed in the first place. And that's a huge, huge barrier. The package install tools are absolutely critical to package source. It's what we rely on for doing everything in package source. So, we want to have a look at the package plus contents format. That's for those of you who are not too into the intricacies of this. The plus contents file is what happens to the plist once it's been installed. And it gets various bits added, deleted, depending on whether you've got shared libraries or not, whether you've got managed pages, gzip, all that kind of thing. package install tools, if we are going to rewrite them, let's think about what they need, rather than just dashing into a straight rewrite. A straight rewrite doesn't solve anything, although for some areas of computer science it seems to be the way to maintain programs these days. We need to think about things before we do this. You don't just sit down and start coding away. Well, you could do it, but it's not really much good to anybody. We need to take away the hand-built parsers and get rid of the weird plus contents format of it. The plus contents one, if you've ever had a look at it, it has the file name on one line and then a continuation on the next line with the MD5 signature from the binary file. This is because it got added at a later date from FreeBSD. We need to get away from that kind of a hackiness, I think the best way of putting it. We need to use portable constructs across the whole package install. And that means things like moving away from StatVFS or StatFS, which doesn't work the same in all platforms. It's not very good. It's liable to break. Almost every platform we port to seems to have that. The reason that we have it is to see if there's enough space to extract a binary file, or extract form a binary file into a binary package, and we can then move it across into its eventual location.
Excellent.
Other ways of doing that, we can create a file in its place and then delete it. Anything like that, just to take away the StatFS and StatVFS dependencies. Use portable constructs at all, wherever possible, please. And finally, let's encourage the migration of packages across from Package Source Work in Progress, or WIP, across into Package Source itself. I can't remember how many packages there are, but 1,700 in WIP? More, yes. And we've got some guys there who are really enthusiastic, but also need a bit of direction too. It's a great thing, Package Source WIP, it really is nice. Because we've got all the raw blood, the raw meat coming through there. They just need to be mentored, to guided, and shown how to do things properly. We gain not only new packages from this, but we also gain new developers from this as well. So I fully support Thomas and everything that he's done with this. I think it's great. But we do need to get away of keeping these guys interested, of moving their packages across from WIP into Package Source. And so if all of us could take some time to do this, to have a look at what's in WIP, see if there's anything that we like, and if so, go out, talk to the guys, see what they do is right, see what they're doing is wrong, and move it across for them. We actually need to come up with more than that. We need to come up with a formal method, a means of migration of this, so that we do keep people engaged. And I'm sorry to keep on speaking to marketing, speaking of engaged solutions and things like that. It just comes with the territory these days. I'm sorry about that. Well, I think we've seen a number of occasions when we've offered advice to people on the package source web things and they haven't taken it. Or they decided to open a shouting match or something like that. And yeah, well, if these guys don't want to learn it, it's fine. But I think on the whole, the majority of people, the reason they put stuff into package source web is because they want to have themselves known, they want to share a bit of the stuff that they can do. And I think that we can, if we can harness that for the better of package source, and great, let's do it. So package source growth. I don't just mean package source growth in the terms of number of packages here. I think that's a very one-sided or one-dimensional way of looking at how your package source is. We all know how your package source is. We want it to grow through number of users. No, for a number of people who realize that building from source isn't just an option, it really is becoming a necessity these days. The number of interesting things you find in binary packages all over the place. But to do that, we need to agree the direction and we go there together. In detail. We need to start discussion on package install and tech package. If if we are going to start developing it, since it is such a critical part of the system, we need to get agreement on everybody's part as to what we're going to do for package install. An interesting one that has come just up just recently on one of the mailing lists was targeting IPS on Solaris. Now, from what I can see, and I haven't read that much of it, IPS is just we'll take some Fibre packages, we'll take Debian packages, Fink ones, and we'll trust them, right? They provide a means of doing that. I'm not sure I'm speaking out of turn here, Sun weren't aware of package source and weren't really that interested when they did become aware of it. We need to do something that is probably at a high level, but also at a low level as well. We need to get Solaris interested in IPS and all the benefits that we can bring to their packaging system. I'm sure I'll be talking to people about this later on. We need same digital signing of packages. Again, I've talked at great length, I think, about verification of this, about finding out the provenance of packages, about making sure it's not been interfered with in any way. I really don't give a toss how it's done, whether it is GPG or whether it's some other method, the NVSD tool that's recently gone into source. Fine. As long as it's got all the functionality that we need, and it gives an idea of where it's come from, who did this. Right. We need a policy and package inclusion. That's the one mainly that we're talking about from Wink. But there are also some instances recently as well. Like we've seen some KDE4 packages turn up, but not all of them, that kind of thing. We need to decide how we're going to do this. They're all there now. Yeah. Oh, they're well. Okay, my apologies. Thanks for that. Right, move on. Fix the bulk build problems so that we can run it on every platform for everything we do. And York's been talking about that earlier on as well, and how he's going to go forward with developing that. The other aspect of this is that when we did a quarterly release, or when we did a release for package source, one of the criteria we used to insist on before we actually did the branch was that there were zero errors from a bulk build on the latest released version of NetBSD, since NetBSD is the primary platform for package source. Last I looked on AMD64, there were upwards of 300 packages not building on NetBSD on the last released version. And to a certain extent, I'm one of the ones at most at fault here, not because I commit crap to the tree or anything like that, but mainly because I'm not helping to fix stuff.
418 overall
broken
and 197
directly broken. Okay, is that current or four?
No, that's at least four.
Okay, thanks. AMD64?
Yes.
Alright, so we have some LP64 problems in there, I think. You're right. And the movement from WIP to package source that we talked about already. So, there's some suggestions. I haven't seen any hands going around saying they want to see the inappropriate book covers, by the way. You're doing well. Keep up. Yeah. Right. It's all very well for this old but very cute guy to come along here and lecture you about what you should be doing. Right? I'm fully aware that I'm one of the ones that need to do this kind of stuff as well. I also want to see package source stay where it is and grow. Be better. I've sunk more than 10 years of my life into this, and I can't go back, but even if I was to go back, I'd still do it. It's been a great fun, it really has been good. And I'd like you to enjoy that as well, right? It's a great operating system. It's a great packaging system, and we need to be evangelists for this. I'm sorry about the word evangelist there. Right, so I've got three types of suggestion, long, medium, and short term. We always start with the long term. I know what the aims are for this. So, we've got to rewrite package install. Everybody agree?
Not what the language said.
No, what?
Why?
Well done!
I mean, we've wiped, yes, definitely, but why you have a higher level.
So what do you want to accomplish?
Exactly. What do we want to accomplish? My own personal wishes for the rewrite were so that we move away from MD5 signatures in the plus contents file. I think that's a bit weak these days, especially when we're relying on stronger cryptographic digests.
Sorry? What do you want to rewrite exactly? What do you talk about now?
Back in the
snow.
But we do want to get some better functionality in there. We want to make it so that the plus contents file is at least sane in these days. We're working on stuff that's 10 years out of date. Things have changed in those times. It doesn't involve a complete rewrite, I believe. It just involves a rewrite of some of the back ends that we do. We don't obviously have to do it in Perl because that's the language du jour and it's just so useful these days.
Obviously,
yes. Python for all the Google people who will be out there and sponsored to do this, I should think. Ruby, tons of Ruby fans, including all our new Rails stuff, so we could probably have it web enabled while we do it. Lua for all the monotone fans out there. Lots of scope for rewriting all of that. Right. Flavors. I mentioned earlier Johnny Lamb's Flavors. It's a way of making up a native binary package format from some of the packages that we have in Package Circle. Is it going to reset a stone in that respect? And I think it's what IPS is trying to solve for some in this large packaging. All that's different is the metadata and the metadata format of doing that. The same binary files are there, assuming that you build it all from Package Source or from any other system as well. So we can use the flavors to make up binary packages for other operating systems. Now, I'm one of the worst ones in this because I should have taken a look at this years ago, as in 6 years ago, and thought about this kind of flavors that I just didn't have Johnny's foresight. And that is why you see things like GenRPM and GenSalt package lining up the package tools directory and package source. I did the individual point solutions to there again, and I've just hit the buzzword bingo for about the sixth time now. Right. I did the individual packages to do that. I should be thinking much, much bigger, and it's the Johnny's bit that we did that. Package source is the source building one. That's what the source is in there for. And there's so many benefits that come from that. It's not just the downside of packaging. Transfer and things like that. There's so many benefits we can have from building it ourselves. So it's IPS for the free world and IPS for the free thinking. We need to decide the database format. Last year's Package Source Con, hope you all enjoyed it. I wasn't here, that's right. There was an interesting talk about Package Jam from Johnny and the other day. That's just one of the ways of doing this. Do we need an SQL database or a registry, for want of a better term? Again, I'll try and flavor my thinking there on it. Do we need one file for everything? Do we need a central database? Do we need per package plus contents, or do we just need one? Should it be SQL? Should it be text-based? How should we be doing this? If we're thinking of making any changes, we should be discussing these kind of things. And it'd be great to do so. So, medium term. Once we decided what we're going to do, we need to decide how we're going to get there. Medium term. So the end state we've got, how do we do that? One of the problems with the plus contents file at the moment is that somebody on a system can they can tamper with one of the files in a package. So say it's Perl or something like that, they can tamper the Perl package to make sure that it calls in a special file and it removes the password database, something like that. Now to cover up the tracks, all we need to do is change the MD5 signature in the plus contents file. If these people are already able to modify the Perl binary to do that. They're quite able to do that in our package database. Because then the other thing is the utans, which can easily be done by our sync or a tar under the top. And then there would be absolutely no idea we've had that the package would be interfered with in any way. So the problem we have at the moment in package source.
But if I may interrupt you, are you suggesting to use package source as an intrusion detection mechanism?
No, I'm not. But at the same time, the MD5 signatures are there. What are they used for?
To not delete files that have been changed.
Yeah.
So the open changes are not lost.
That's right.
Yeah, I think MD5 is good enough for that.
MD5 is good enough, yes. Yes, you're right. But what I am seeing as well is that I don't want to use it as an intrusion detection system because that's not what package source is for.
Exactly.
But if it's also used as one of the forensic tools, if somebody is to look at a box that's been compromised already.
But that's not what package source was designed for, and it's not really suitable. If it's not really meant to prevent any criminal attacker from making any modifications.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I don't think it's meant to be. It's not tripwire.
It's not like tripwire, it's not like aid, and for various reasons. But at the same time, it's another tool that we have. And sometimes you need all the tools you can get for these kind of things.
Right. What if you take this seriously, this database has to be on another host?
All right.
Exactly. It has to be secured.
So whatever you had for bar would be package.
Right, okay. Well let's look at ways that other packaging systems have done it. RPM use a digest and a signature on it, so if you have assigned RPM, what they do is sign the plus contents file.
You should
see
the
actually on the system.
Sorry?
You should
probably
give you
just on the system
without
the password.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it raises the bar
though. Yeah. It seems that actually signing the SPIO archive and the RPM, not just the content list.
Okay, well, I've had email from one of the OpenBSD developers saying what a great step forward he's made by doing this. Right, they put signatures on their plus contents file at the moment.
Yes,
that's what he told me. I don't believe it's a signature. I believe it's a digest.
I know a bit about that. Part of the problem, I didn't do that. It doesn't help as much as you might think, because there's a lot of metadata that's not in the contents file. And it's crucially important. I mean, if you have an attacker and you want to have an undetectable backdoor to the system, just that the security root bit on the Perl binary, you don't have to change the content of it, just make it security root and be done.
No, you'll complain about the
Take another binary. Take that shell or whatever. The basic idea is the same. Just make a binary that you ID root and you have a backdoor. And nothing.
These things are picked up certainly in NetBSD where the security runs every night. So it's not quite that easy to do it. What I'm saying is that we can do things better.
But no matter what algorithm and what implementation you choose, as long as an attacker has access to the database, whatever format it is in, he can easily manipulate it as needed.
Yeah.
So, as somebody said, if you want to have a security system, you have to separate these things.
That's right.
Regardless of how
you
implement it.
Sorry? You need the signed keys that were else.
Yes,
you
certainly don't leave the signing key around on it.
Yeah, okay.
And you add digital
that's
signatures
true.
In. So
signing, but again, if you're building stuff on your machine,
yes.
On your machine, you need this stuff anyway.
It doesn't help if, in the case where you build and sign and install on the same machine, because the attacker can simply do that.
Yeah.
If you, on the other hand, if you actually use binary packages, if you roll them out, you may want to have that because you have your secure machine that actually builds the packages, and you roll them out to different tools that may be under.
Why I'm objecting against using package source as a security system is that normally packages only makes a percentage of all the software installed on the system. So package source, in most cases, does not really govern the whole system. So it would, if you really want to secure your system cryptographically, then you should have some means to do it with the entire system. It doesn't make sense to do it only for 50%, because there's enough options for any attacker to attack the system anyway. And it doesn't make sense to have two or parallel security systems doing the same thing. It's too cumbersome.
Someone else compiles.
Yeah.
It's a good thing if you know that they have not been tampered with in our transmission.
Okay,
that's
for sure.
Question. That's why we sign binary packages.
But that's signing binary packages. That's perfect. That's a very good thing.
All right, that's signing back the binary packages. The way we have binary packages signed at the moment is signing the TAR archive. So we'll be able to find out at the end of transmission whether the package has been interfered with in any
that's
way.
Perfect, yes.
Once it's installed, you lose all that protection.
Yeah.
Right. We can certainly look at other digests in the plus contents file. It's not going to cause any trouble to us. A few extra cycles in install time, maybe, or certainly the package create time. But it would help for all of these kind of things. And if you really don't believe me about having a look at machines that have been compromised, then I'll have a chat to you later, because this is one of the main ways we can do it easily up front and with relatively little intrusion into the ordinary user. If they don't want to use it, fine. But for those of us who do, and I run a number of hosts which are out there on the internet, and actually I certainly don't want compromised in any way, I'd be happy for something like this.
If you are trusting such an environment, you're just being left false.
I agree, but one of the other things that we try and do is to raise the bar wherever possible. I'm not saying use this as a sole means of trust. I'm saying raise the bar wherever possible. I'm saying run aid and tripwire if you want to do that. There are various ways of attacking the phone call.
In the raising bar from the instant you just with 1 meter, and then everyone can jump over.
Yeah, the idea is to say this with you have dummy security alarms outside houses, you would be built in the next house.
Isn't it only just a bit security by obscurity? Only because attackers are not likely to know about this mechanism?
That doesn't have to be a bad idea, but basically, before doing anything like this, please make very, very sure what are actually the attack vendors we want to protect against.
Yeah.
And without that, just security theater.
I'm not saying that we're doing this. I'm saying these are some of the things we've got to
yes,
think about.
Yes, I mean,
and
that
we need to talk about this
like
on,
that.
On the public mailing list on packagesource.org. I'm certainly not saying I'm going to do this straight away, but as I say, these are some of the aspects that we need to think about that maybe we haven't considered up until now. Let's move on to some of the less controversial ones here. Alex-based parser plus contents. Let's get rid of the hand-carved ones that we've been using for 10 plus years.
I don't think that would improve anything, because the problem is not so much writing a parser for plus contents. The problem is the format itself. And a Syno replacement, I think Dillo suggested using MT-like syntax.
Actually, I disagree completely. The reason we should use that is because it's easier to maintain. The hand-built one is not easy. You have to add things in at the top, an enumerated statement. You have to add things in numerous case statements as well. Sorry, switch statements. It's not as easy as you think, right? Also, we need to get away from some of that code, which is just horrible. I mean, it's a reason that I don't put my own name down there.
But my problem with saying Lex-based parser help is Lex-based parser doesn't make most of the code go away, because the code that's actually having to interpret the contents file still has to exist. And the parser is at the moment not a big issue, because the format is so simple, it's trivial to parse.
I'm not saying doing it for performance reasons, I'm saying doing it for maintenance reasons.
Yes, even for maintenance reasons,
right.
It's trivial
you
to
may
parse.
Be, you may be very confident with the code and things like that. I personally hate that code. It was written by somebody who was put in the first comment, this was born to hack. It's not good, it's the reason that I will not put my name anywhere near that code, even though I'm probably the one that's changed it most. Right? It's done for maintenance reasons. If you have a Lex grammar, it's so much easier to maintain, to extend, to do the things that you want to, rather than just yet more handwritten cruft on there. Right? Text-based database, do we need that? Is SQL a better reason for speed? Let's do some measurements on it. Let's find out what's the rank.
Is speed an issue here?
Yes and no.
It depends how many packages you have installed.
The problem is not the overhead of parsing a single contents file. I mean, even parsing the contents file of, for example, TTechMF, which is supposedly the largest single package out there, is very, very fast. The problem we have right now is we have a number of operations that have to read all the contents files of all the packages. For example, if you want to check if package conflicts with an already installed package, you currently have to pass the contents file of all the packages. This is just a question of caching the right information. But if you don't have that cache, yes, it's a speed issue. So most of the problems go away if you cache the right data.
Absolutely. Problems go away if you cache the right things. The problem then moves on to keeping the cache up to date.
Yes.
It also then serializes installation of packages. You can't do many at one time.
Actually, that's something we should do anyway, in my opinion.
Well, again, that's your opinion. Beforehand, we used to be able to do that before we had the cache contents. And things were much easier to do in that respect. It's also one of the reasons we have the locking stuff in there now. Anyway, so Dister, we've got one implementation there at the moment, and I approved a commit message to the package source changes mailing list on Thursday, I think. They had, was it 1,800 changes?
It touched around 1,200 files, I think.
It's more than 200.
Most of those were just mechanically adding a line to the make file, but the more functional diff was like 25 kilobytes.
No, it's got to be more than 25k because the filters put 40k on the main list.
No, the rest was all the CVS message queue, like the CVS art of lines and so on.
Okay, there are actually two other ways of doing this, though. Some of the ones that we can use in different operating systems as well. If you do some of the wrappers like Johnny's done for the building stuff, using install, libstool, yes, intentional typo there, ranlib and the PAX wrappers and things like that, it's interesting to see how many tools actually want access into the Dister. That is one way of doing it, and the advantage of that is that you don't actually have to prefix Dister into everything. There's another way of doing it, which some other packaging systems do, and that's to inject into prefix in the install phase in the equivalent of bsd.package.make. Both of these ways are non-intrusive, and we've got the other way, which is the way that all of the Linux ones and we've gone now, of having the Dister prefix in there in all the make files, which is intrusive on everything. And there's also another way of doing it, which is using the metalog approach from source.
Just to comment a bit on it. Yes, it can be done. Quite a number of packages are now using, for example, the second mechanism of overriding the prefix variable included in the packages at install time. It can't be done by default simply because two mechanisms conflict. If you have a package that is using Destiny and also using prefix, you can't include the Destiny path in both variables because it won't work, of course.
Yeah. Certainly, I completely agree. And I, to put some sanity into this as well, about 5 years ago, Stone and I went through a number of packages to work out the best way of doing it from the two that are there and the one that we're using at the moment. And often, there wasn't the best way of doing it. For most of the GNU AutoConf ones, it's the way we're doing it at the moment, the DESTER, the explicit DESTER. The other two needed a lot of work up front. We needed a fair amount of work up front, and then we needed to make sure which packages were able to be installed like that. What I would like people to do is think of other solutions to things as well. We can do it, talk to us, we can give advice on what we've done in the past. And one other one that we haven't looked at is the Metalog approach from source, which is also an interesting way of making up binary packages, or what we mean.
Actually, the Metalog approach is a variation of using drivers. The Metalog approach is essentially boils down to the first one, wrapping the install comment and a number of other things.
Yeah, but it's also using packs to package it up as a binary run, and
okay.
Using the features involved in that.
What are the things that we should discuss in the short future is how we want to get, for example, ownership information inside the contents file. We currently don't do that at all, which is bad because it's one of those things that actually change in a system and that you want to know about as a user. Not because something really tried to hack into your system, but simply because software is not working correctly if ownership information and so on change. And of course, it's important if you want to be able to recreate the package from just the metadata and what is installed. When we decide how this should look like, it's very easy to actually get the right interface for package create.
Yeah, absolutely. That depends. That goes back to the plus contents format that we had earlier as well. Because at the moment we can't do that kind of thing, or we could add yet another line onto the handcrafted parser that we have in package install.
We can somewhat do it using SDHEX, but let's not go down that road.
No.
One problem I explicitly want to mention, and the reason why I didn't use the wrappers to do the DESTER support is that there are actually a surprising number of packages that have hard-coded their names, for example, to install. So they won't use the wrapper version unless you actually hack them to do that. And you have to make sure you got all invocations of tools, otherwise it will break. And making that sure for arbitrary packages is quite hard, and it's definitely not much easier than doing the correct testing matching.
Actually, it's not quite hard. You know, these packages can't all modify. They all can't modify read-only mounted file systems. They can only mount this by write notice when it fails.
Yes.
That's another way of doing it, using union maps and things like that, and also fanout file systems to do the same kind of thing. The trouble with that is it's not portable across operating systems. You can find the GSD. But yeah, you're right about the rewrite and everything else redone. Right. So, trust. How is trust decided? GPG, BGP, MVSV tool. Couldn't care less. Absolutely couldn't care less. But what we do need is one way of doing it and one way of doing it properly. Right? In order to do this, we're going to have to get package source security involved in this kind of thing. They need to write up policies, they need to write up everything like that that's involved in digital signing of packages. We need to discuss whether we want to do this kind of thing, whether it's worth it in the long run, because it's a lot of work. Is it really worth the pain that we're going to go through for this? The other thing that I would encourage people to do is to have a look at the package source vulnerability report that's sent every day to the packages billing list. Have a look there and see if there's anything you can sort out. There's around about 250, I think, packages on stable that are vulnerable, a bit more on ahead, or the other way around.
Yeah,
we need to get sorted of these things. To do that, we need more volunteers to package sort of security. So if you've got any spare cycles, please lend a hand to help me inside on this one.
Actually, it doesn't happen that much to be a member of package source security if you just want to bring down the number of vulnerable packages. Most of these packages are vulnerable because no one knows how to fix the issues. And no one includes upstream in this case.
Right. One of the things that I had a talk with package source security before about was having a priority number, a percentage, based on how quickly you needed to fix itness of the exploit. There are some things out there like Mozilla we've had flagged as being insecure since 1.5, basically because somebody outside your computer can tell the path on which it's installed. Right? Well, for most people using package as a source, it's going to be user package bin anyway. So why is that considered more vulnerable than a root exploit using some other thing like NLAMP or Wireshark or something like that? So what I would say is that anybody who sees a vulnerability in one of their packages, please consider to look at it fairly sharpish, please. That would be great. Right. It's not just NetNet, BSD, and Dragonfly. How do we improve support for other platforms? I was really interested to see that graph that you had earlier. If you could put that available somewhere, I'd be really grateful, thanks. Showing the number of packages that we had, that was superb. It's not just the flavors that we're talking about here, it's also build fixes on other platforms too. And let's remember our strengths. We build the package from scratch. I can't think of any other operating systems that do that, or any other ones that build for multiple platforms.
I think Gentoo, they do that.
Portability in this case.
No, I'm not saying
Linux is very, very.
Yeah, I'm not talking about portability, but building from scratch.
Yeah, sure.
Which is the difference?
There are a number of systems that do that. I think there are only one or two systems that actually try to work on more than one target operating system. So the number of contenders in that open package or whatever it is called, and one other in that area. But most of them are much smaller in scale.
Is open package still exist?
I'm not sure.
Is that the careless MIFAS open package?
Don't ask me.
Okay.
This is from the deeper memory regions.
Right. One of the things that I would certainly like to look into, and I will do if I get any time over the next 6 months, the probabilities of that are fairly slim, I've got to say, but one of the things I'd like to look at is when we go fat packages, it's the PCBSD idea of including the building parts in the binary package. So when you install a binary package, it's going to be a bit fatter than it was previously, and there's nothing wrong with that, let me tell you that. Right? But it will give you all the functionality that you built it with. Put it down in a separate directory further down the thing, modify the building so it knows where to find it, and this will give you straight away the problem of updating will go, because you can just install a package and go, which would be rather nice. It means that when NetPBM, JPEG or something like that, one of those ones has a vulnerability fixed in it. You don't have to go through upgrade hell. You don't have to go through package rolling replace, make replace, make updates, all of which may not work for different reasons or whatever. You can install parts into a subdirectory and prefix, and it will burn some disk space, but on the whole, it's a benefit.
Sorry? What exactly are you planning to do?
I'm not planning to do anything. This is one of the things that I would like to look into. It's so take, for example, what package should we have that has a lot of dependencies?
Take Firefox.
Sorry?
Take Firefox. Oh,
yeah.
One of the managers includes GTK. Enlightenment.
Yeah.
Right? Enlightenment. it builds a relatively of various dependencies. They're worked out through building as to which they are. They're all written into the dot building directory, the symlinks to find the right place in the file system where they are. What I'm suggesting is that a package create time, instead of just writing the contents of the enlightenment package into the Dexter, what we do is we also copy the targets of the symlinks that it's built with. Right, so we have the actual GTK libs, glib as well, all of those. And to put them in a subdirectory, modify lib tool to know where to find them.
I think this is one of those ideas that sound very nice in theory until you actually start to implement them.
Okay.
And one of the problems is what do you actually do if you have, for example, a libgpeg explode?
Sorry?
What do you actually do when you have a libgpeg explode? Because now you have not one libgpeg you have to update, but potentially one for all those big fat packages.
Absolutely,
that you have
yeah.
And it's the same problem we are already fighting with statically compiled in versions, for example, of PCIe. We had some issues with that, where lots of packages have a local version of PCIe inside, and it can be a security vulnerability. Now we had to hunt down all those examples.
You say that, a simple echo command will show you all the libraries of that. Yes.
So you're suggesting that each and every package should have their private shared libraries, for instance.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So doesn't this defeat the purpose of shared libraries?
Yes.
So what's the point?
Well, the point is that when you do an update at the moment,
yeah,
it's a pain. That's why we have so many tools to do it, and none of them fixes it.
Yeah.
Although I admit that Rolling Replace is probably the best one so far.
I mean, basically boils down to just use a different prefix for all major applications. It makes sense for something like OpenOffice to just have all the other dependencies installed into the same prefix as well.
And I'm certainly not suggesting do this for every package. I'm
saying
have it as a switch.
It
would be interesting to see whether it would work.
Okay.
Yeah.
It might be interesting for developers, maybe.
Actually, not for developers, but for users to just have a phantom of this library.
Isn't this basically trying to solve some of the same problems as package trying to solve, but without some of the benefits of the
project? Yeah.
Is this basically saying, okay, we couldn't get package to develop, let's just try anything?
Well, it's not so much a good package. Two is a heavy go at it, and to various degrees of workfulness. I certainly wouldn't imagine that anyone can use package views these days. It's just gone completely. So I don't know why we're keeping a hold on it. Although I think the last time you already asked me, if you could get rid of it, I said, I'll probably change my mind this time, next time you ask me.
I asked you about the management scripts to package install, whether we still want to install them, because those are the last uses of PAX and friends.
Yeah, I thought I said you could get rid of those, didn't
I just stopped installing them.
Yeah,
yes.
they're in the CPU's repo anyway,
yes.
So there's no problem there. Right. Amitai is going to talk about that tomorrow. I'm not going to go anywhere near it except to try and steer him in a few directions, obviously. Package source PMC. Does everybody know who's on it? This is the project management committee for package source.
Johnny's on it.
Johnny's on it. Dilla, Wiz, myself, and Amitai. Five of us. And it's package source -PMC. So, feedback requested. What are we doing right?
Did you do anything?
No, it's a good question. There's various things that have come up in the past.
Where?
Hey?
Where can I read all that?
You can't. It was
how do we get feedback?
Good question. We're obviously not transparent enough. So we should take that on board. Well, my questions for this one is, what are we doing right, what are we doing wrong, and what are we doing? Right? And so obviously you've answered the last one there. We don't know what we're doing. You don't know what we're doing. And so
isn't that a good sign?
A bit more obvious.
Isn't it a good sign that PackageSort PMC is practically invisible?
In some ways, yes. In other ways, no.
Let me put it a different way. Doesn't it mean that the normal self-government of developers work?
So you don't. But you're suggesting it. You don't need that anyway.
I'm suggesting that we normally don't need them. Yes, which is a good thing.
All right.
We still have them.
Just so you know, it's a kind of project management committee, a kind of core for Package Source. So if you have any questions, any concerns, or anything like that, please let us know about it. We'd also be interested in knowing what your feedback is about this as well. If we should be more transparent, we should be more dynamic, that kind of thing. Moving on to another one, the quarterly branches that we have. Discuss. These are some of the comments I've heard about them. The need more than one branch, I think we can discount that one, right? I think he was trying to make a point, and certainly the resources that we have, it's a viable proposition to do that kind of thing. Puts too much work in package source releng. That's actually one of my comments about it, about the quarterly ones. I just realised I can't spell quarterly, my apologies. Is it too much work?
Well, if there are two people work with it, yes.
Who uses the quarterly branches? On some hosts? That's probably their own forum to ask that question, giving their own developer. I know a number of people who use the quarterly branches as well outside of this thing, so I know that they are fairly well used outside in real life. So the relevant guys could do that.